Hello and welcome to the D2C podcast. I'm Eric Dick. Today we're talking with Keen's founder Greg Dolan about 2024 planning and how brands can determine their optimum media mix. From shattering my concept to what top of funnel really means, to teaching me the basics of media mix analysis, to understanding the real power of AI to determine the real halo effects and points of negative return to understand all of your marketing channels better, this podcast was super interesting. Are you truly omnichannel? Do you want to be? Then go to keends.com to get a taste of modern media mix analysis. But for now, on with the show.
Omnichannel is imperative. You have to be hitting the consumer in a lot of different ways and a lot of different channels to be completely effective and to have all those interaction effects. I'm not saying investing a lot in Meta is not a good idea. I'm just saying investing to the point where it's not profitable anymore, where you can invest elsewhere and have more impact, is what you really need to know, right? So there is a point of diminishing returns on Meta. We can find it. And then whatever is left over, we'd say, let's redeploy that to other channels where we could reach the consumer and have a big impact. Ideally, you want to be 70-30 top of the funnel, bottom of the funnel to really build your brand long term. We can show you how to do that in a way that's profitable and sustainable.
Greg, welcome to the D2C podcast. At D2C right now, we're maybe a little behind the eight ball, but we're feverishly working on our annual plan for the year. And I wanted to ask you, what do you think D2C brands out there are doing wrong with their annual plan?
Eric, great to be with you. Obviously annual planning is a hectic time of year. And I think a lot of times brands like to just take a look at what they've done in the past and then apply that to what they're going to do going forward. This isn't the best approach because the world changes, the external environment changes, the competitive set changes. And I think being able to set a plan, not set and forget, but set and be agile and dynamic and flexible is going to be key to success. And I think D2C marketers do a better job of that than brick and mortar marketers. And they're well ahead of the curve when it comes to being agile and being able to adapt to how the market unfolds. But I think going in with the mindset of, let's take a look at what's happened in the last year to 2 years. Let's understand that from the purposes of understanding which channels and campaigns have worked and which haven't. Let's apply what we know is different about the marketplace going forward, and then have a system like ours, honestly, to be able to incorporate all that information, the full knowledge estate, to be able to be able to understand what things do you do that are similar to what you've done in the past, and what changes do you need to make, and how much more or less can you spend in order to achieve the financial metrics. And I think that's the other missing piece to all of this, is that it's got to be connected directly to what you're being held accountable for as a brand from a financial perspective. Are you looking to be a heavy top line driver? Are you looking to drive profitability? You're looking to drive long-term value? All of those would result in very different plans. So understanding those trade-offs is really important. I think that's a really big missing piece for a lot of D2C marketers and marketers across the spectrum.
And then digging in a little bit more specifically, because this is the D2C podcast. We when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So we're always looking for ways that we can grow our business with media buying, essentially. So when it comes to media mix, where do you see brands going wrong? Like specifically, I'm always interested. Are people not spending enough on certain platforms? Are there some platforms that are passengers that aren't getting the return? Like, where do you see people going wrong with their media mix?
I think the blunt instrument is ROAS, right? So I think that the belief that something that's worked in the past is going to work in the future is a challenge, right? So, and not understanding marginal returns is also the key piece. So just because the latest dollar has had a strong return on ad spend does not mean that the next dollar is going to have the same impact, or if there's missing opportunities to invest in other channels. I think that's probably the biggest piece, is that there's a focus on just a couple of channels, and I'm going to put all my dollars into one or two channels, whether it's Meta or Google or Amazon, and I'm just going to ride that wave for as long as possible. That is I think an approach that it limits the opportunity to really fully diversify and surround the consumer with the right touch points that are going to make it as effective as possible. The other piece that it misses is the fact that a lot of that, most of that is really, you know, the bottom of the funnel and more performance and growth marketing and less focus on top of the funnel brand building. And what we know from our work across categories, including a lot of D2C players, is that a good balance between top and the bottom, at the top and the bottom of the funnel in terms of investment, will increase the effectiveness of all the marketing tactics. And incorporating marginal returns and marginal response curves, so knowing where you are from a marginal, what's the impact of the next dollar, will be able to make sure that you're allocating dollars optimally across your entire mix, and you're investing in channels that could provide a really strong initial return. And also getting the timing right of your marketing. So seasonality is a key piece. And a lot of times we see D2C marketers want to invest in Prime Day or in certain time periods during the year and overinvest and overstack during those time periods to the point where it's unprofitable. And what that does is limit the opportunity to invest elsewhere more profitably and potentially provide a lot more continuity and support for the brand as well.
And then the other aspect we talked about is because I want to dive into omnichannel a little bit, but all the D2C brands, of course, want to go retail as well. And with retail, right, there's the geographic concerns as well, right? To make sure you're putting your resources into the right, like, geographic areas as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's you have to have a good balance. So the channels that are going to work in brick and mortar and retail relative to e-com are going to be different, and there are going to be halo effects across both. Right. So you got to make sure that you're investing the right amount of dollars in e-com versus brick and mortar versus retail to make sure that you're optimizing the mix across, and it will have interaction effects across both. Right. So it's really key for you to understand those interaction effects in order to plan effectively.
Talk to me a little bit about media mix is something that I was first exposed to when I was selling to Ogilvy and some big agencies in that world. And I come from this sort of ruthless performance marketing world. Talk to me about a little bit about media mix as like where it came from and then what it looks like today.
All right. So it hasn't really until you know, companies like us have come around, it hasn't really evolved a whole lot in the last 30 years. So media mix has been traditionally consulting driven, right? So it's regression analysis. So you take a bunch of time series data. So let's take your impressions over the last 2 years. Let's take your GRPs for TV and let's correlate that via regression to an outcome variable like sales, right? And you're able to statistically infer how much impact a specific channel is having on your overall sales. It's very static. It's always been a point in time where every year I'm going to do this big analysis and pull all my data and then look back and provide a report card to the brand. Obviously, it was focused very much on offline channels, right? It was focused on TV and radio and print and out of home. And it was easy to set and forget those plans, right? So buying was up front and you were able to get a good understanding of what worked in the past and then apply that to your forward-looking plan. Well, obviously the world has changed over the last 10, 20 years with digital and fragmentation and e-com and going direct to consumer. Everything kind of pendulum swung from traditional media mix to attribution, digital. And the problem with attribution is it really focuses just on digital channels. So you're missing the whole offline piece then. So how marketing mix has evolved, and we think of ourselves as a next-gen marketing mix solution, is that it actually pulls together from an omni-channel perspective, both your offline and your online in one model. It leverages some of the aspects of the approach that traditional media mix and marketing mix have provided via regression, but we've also been able to incorporate other information into the models as well to be able to really start teasing apart and understanding the interaction effects across the entire funnel, across offline, online, and be able to do that in a dynamic way via software that not only helps you to provide, you know, a faster result that keeps up with the speed of the market, but more importantly, also then gives you a platform to be able to plan and optimize and, you know, demand plan, provide a forecast associated with each one of your marketing plans as well. And that's really where the market's going, is becoming much more software driven. It's got to be faster because of all the fragmentation and all the decisions marketers have to make. And you have to be able to understand top, bottom of the funnel and the halo and interaction effects across everything that you're doing to be effective.
It's super interesting. I know it's going to be a good conversation when, you know, we do the pre-interview and then I bring up, you know, the thing we talked about like on my other podcast that week. I was kind of talking with everyone awesome. About this idea because I come from, again, like this hardcore performance marketing world where When you said that in your world that Meta isn't really thought of as top of funnel, it's very much bottom of funnel. It's direct response, right? And the way I think about it, it compresses the funnel directly, often because you're bringing in new customers, you're exposing new customers, and then you're selling them directly. But it kind of leaves out, it makes it harder to build that longer term brand potentially, right? That you can get from these higher tier things. So what I like about what you're saying is that if you have the intelligence, it frees you up to take these other shots of true top of funnel things that, again, you have to be hyper strategic about how you do it. But when you do those right, you really see where the halo effect can come from the right celebrity interaction or the right narrative driven, you know, high quality video or TV ad. Like as soon as you see a brand on TV, it kind of jumps categories for you in some ways about the kind of brand it is. And to be able to quantify that, it's cool that you'd allow brands to take bigger moonshots, right?
Absolutely. That's the key piece, right? To be able to quantify. And I think it's always, you know, marketers have always gravitated to what they can quote unquote measure, right? And really understand, real time performance. And that's why everything's gravitated to the bottom of the funnel in a lot of ways, and to digital and to the tactics we're talking about. And what we've been able to do is infer and understand the impact of long-term brand building. And how does, you know, TV at the top of the funnel interact with all the things that you're doing at the mid funnel and the bottom of the funnel. And what we found through our system and work that we've done across categories is that there is interaction effects, and the impacts are felt across the funnel. So if you're investing at the top of the funnel on TV, it's having an impact and improving the performance of your mid funnel and bottom of funnel activities, and vice versa. So it's really lifting all the boats. And we're seeing that performance sustain over time. And the other thing that it's doing is actually building your base. So it's building you're able to retain your customers as you're bringing them into your franchise, which allows you to then build long-term sustainable value.
Does it work across email and retention as well?
So it's omnichannel. So we include email retention. So you're seeing the entire marketing mix in one model. So if you're doing influencer work at the top of the funnel, you've invested in TV, that's interacting with everything you're doing kind of throughout the funnel, you know, down through all your performance marketing. And you're able to see, you know, how much more you should be investing in the bottom of the funnel relative to the top of the funnel based on what you're trying to achieve as a brand. So we have a lot of brands that are saying, I got to grow the top line at all costs, right? So they're willing to invest unprofitably. So we're able to show you, here's how much you can invest to drive that level of revenue. That's going to be a very different plan than one where a brand says, I need to maximize profitability. In that case, you may not grow the top line as fast, and you may not be spending as much, but you're going to be a lot more profitable. So understanding all those trade-offs is critical in the planning process to be able to really have the right conversation with your CFO, with your head of finance, and really start to align what marketing's doing with what the financial expectations are for the business.
And you don't need to spend more necessarily, you can be more efficient. I think there's probably a lot of inefficiencies bottom of funnel, right? Even just to think about the delta between the way you think of top of funnel and the way I think about top of funnel, there's probably a lot of brands overspending on bottom of funnel activities. Would you agree?
We see it all the time. We have D2C customers right now that are spending 100% of their budget bottom of the funnel, a lot on Meta, and they're well over the point of diminishing returns. And it's, you know, to the point where they're not building base at all. They're all their marketing's decaying very quickly, and they're not building anything sustainable in the business, right? So what we're able to do is identify that point of diminishing returns. So what's the top of the curve where every dollar you're investing returns a $1 return on investment, and optimize that across your entire mix, all right? So you know you're not spending any more than you need to across every week during the course of a year to be able to maximize your performance based on what you're trying to achieve from a financial perspective. And that's the holy grail at the end of the day. You need to know exactly where you need to spend to achieve what you need to achieve from a financial perspective.
You know, omnichannel has been the buzzword for 2 or 3 years now, probably. But there's also the counter narrative, which is like, you can ride that Meta horse, pretty far. And like, you should really be mastering, before you get shiny object syndrome, you should be really, you know, mastering one channel more than others. But then the counter narrative is, it's never been easier to be omnichannel. The barriers to becoming omnichannel, whether it's across TV or all these other platforms where your customers might be, Amazon, it's never been easier to be omnichannel. So I know it's going to vary case by case, but what's your stance on omnichannel overall?
Omnichannel is imperative. I think you have to be hitting the consumer in a lot of different ways and a lot of different channels to be completely effective and to have all those interaction effects. And I just want to be clear. I'm not saying that Meta is investing a lot in Meta is not a good idea. I'm just saying investing to the point where it's not profitable anymore, where you can invest elsewhere and have more impact is what you really need to know, right? So there is a point of diminishing returns on Meta. We can find it. And then whatever is left over, we'd say, let's redeploy that to other channels where we could reach the consumer and have a big impact. That's really the benefit of omnichannel. It's really, you know, the fact that you want to have a good mix. Ideally, you want to be 70-30 top of the funnel, bottom of the funnel to really build your brand long term. We can show you kind of, you know, how to do that in a way that's profitable and sustainable.
Can you give me an example of a, you know, anonymous brand that sort of came in, used the tool, shifted their media mix around and, you know, and thrived because of it?
Yeah, we have tons of examples of it. We have a brand that we're working with right now, and I alluded to it. It's a beauty brand, legacy D2C. They're now moving into retail, and they're having a difficult time because all of their marketing has been bottom of the funnel, very performance marketing driven. And that situation that I mentioned before around their all of their marketing is decaying very quickly, and they're overspending in certain channels to the point where it's very unprofitable. And they're not building any kind of retention, no base in their business, right? So they're buying consumers, it's very transactional. They're leaving the franchise very early, and they're not building any kind of sustainable base. And what we've been able to show them and sell their board on at the end of the day is that they need to have a better balance, should be investing a lot more in the top of the funnel, have a better balance between the top and the bottom of the funnel. It will raise all boats, and you'll see an increase in effectiveness on their performance marketing as well. And that's going to have a brand building value creation impact on the overall business, right? And 100%. We've seen that, right? We've started to see much more profitable performance from the brand, much more sustainable performance for the brand. And they've actually been able to get additional budget approved to be able to support that strategy, right? So that's another piece. If you're able to quantify the potential impact and start showing a track record, you can go ask for more money at the end of the day to lean into the strategy.
So we talked TV as true top of funnel. So it makes me realize we only ever talk about middle and bottom of funnel on this podcast, but talk to me about just the other things in your ecosystem that you consider true top of funnel, just so everyone gets on the same page.
The highest end of the funnel, I think, is PR, right? So that's always been a little bit nebulous. We've been able to quantify that. So what you're doing at the, you know, in PR, in TV, in other brand building, equity driven messaging. So any kind of broad reach vehicle, like, I know radio could be spot, but, you know, anything that's broad reach would be at the top of the funnel, right? Influencer would likely be at the top of the funnel, right? You know, anything that's long-term, that's building brands and creating a longer-term relationship with the consumer would be considered longer-term and brand building at the top of the funnel.
Anywhere else you have that people either are over-indexing or under-indexing in this media mix?
I mean, I say this all the time. I know we had the conversation last week, and you know, TV always has a role, and I know it's expensive, and at times, you know, seems a little bit difficult to achieve for some brands. But if there's a way to afford it, you know, that's we see it time and time again have an impact on the brand. TV is not dead. TV still has a prominent role in being able to build relationships with consumers long term. And if you could find a way to afford it, I think it would be worthwhile for a lot of brands and have the biggest impact potentially for a business to grow that top of the funnel. That would be the a lot of cases under indexed. And there's brand like some of the legacy, you know, retail brands are now saying, well, I'm over indexed in TV. And they're cutting everything, and we're telling them, no, add it back because it still has an impact, and you want to mix it, and it'll have, if you have the TV as a cover fire for the rest of your marketing plan, it's going to raise all boats, and it's going to have a big impact on the rest of your marketing mix and the effectiveness of your marketing channel, other marketing channels. But that would be the biggest thing. Like broad reach vehicles in general need to have a role in your marketing mix. And they'll balance well with your short-term transaction driving bottom of the funnel activities.
I think it's funny what we talk about all the time is this just this organic revolution that's happening in the D2C world where people are driving, you know, we come paid first in a lot of ways, but people are driving a lot of their paid presence through organic and through building up this customer base as like an absolutely essential part. How do you see, and it's funny, we're just going through it with us right now where we're trying to, we've got the newsletter and we've got the website and the podcast, but we're trying to grow our like our social media and we're trying to quantify like the value of investing in this new format. Like I know I listen to a lot of podcasts, I read a lot of newsletters, but I watch a lot more vertical video. And so like the actual act of like consuming that content is not going anywhere. People are going to be consuming this content more and more, but it's not always the most, especially organic stuff, isn't always the easily, you know, relatable to revenue. So I imagine that's something that your model is keen on figuring out as well.
It's indirect, you know, statistical inference. Like we'd be able to take, you know, number of subscribers or number of impressions and be able to start map that back to business impact. But it is incredibly important, right, to build the brand and build, you know, build the awareness around the proposition.
And it's one of the last, and if you do it right, it can maybe not be true top of funnel, but it can widen the funnel quite a bit because there is a lot of that organic traffic on these platforms. So finding ways where you can like open up to what's already out there on, especially in social video, I think is going to be really key.
Definitely. Absolutely. I think I'd highly recommend it.
Nice. I'm just curious. So media mix, when I was first learning about it from the big agency world, it was like there was a huge amount of like you had to be spending millions or hundreds of thousands kind of thing for it to even be in play and be like how in terms of like the way you've updated technology, what kind of brands are you looking for basically to be using the tool?
So we work. So our opportunity via software is to work, you know, really democratize decision making, democratize this type of solution. And software allows you to do that because you can offer a solution like ours at a much lower price. So we're working with any brand that spends at least $1 million in marketing. So it opens up the market in a sizable way. Marketing, traditional marketing mix and media mix has been cost prohibitive. So because it's very consulting driven and only the big brands can generally afford it. So a study is, you know, $150,000, $200,000 per brand, and you have to be spending a lot of marketing dollars to be able to support it. And the other piece is that our approach is a little bit different in that we use all information, not just time series information. I don't want to get too into the algorithm, but we can work with brands with very little data. You know, we can tease apart impact, even if you don't have a lot of experience in that tactic. So we're able to kind of show at, you know, at a very, you know, low level of spend potential impact and be able to start teasing apart the interaction effects and different impacts of different channels. And do it, you know, at $25,000 per year for some brands, depending on the size of the brand and the number of users. So very affordable for a lot of brands that that don't spend a lot of money.
And it's always on. It's the paradigm shift, whereas before you're testing big campaigns and their impact for seasonality necessarily. But like this, you're always on, always listening with this. So I'm sure that the analysis is ongoing.
Yeah, I mean, it's software. So as soon as new information becomes available, models can be updated. So every new data point informs the model. So you're constantly learning from the data signals in the market. And the models continue to tune, you know, via machine learning. So the model is going to learn from how you execute, how the market changes, all of those different pieces. At any point in time, if you have a monthly business review, you're taking a look at how accurate your forecast was relative to what you thought in the system. And then it's leveraging that information for you to make the next optimization and decision for your business. So we use it ourselves at Keen. We're B2B software and, you know, we update our models in the Keen platform monthly. And it's the basis for the conversations that we have around where we spend our marketing dollars and how we adjust our forecast.
You got to eat your own dog food.
You have to. That's my favorite.
It's a good business.
My favorite line.
Yeah. So. My least is open the kimono. People should probably banish that one from there.
Yeah, I don't use that
from their
one
lexicon. That was just a little awkward. What about the future? Like you're tied into this algorithm here. You're, you know, where AI is changing people's businesses, especially on the creative side, all the time. Where do you see this sort of like AI going in this business decisioning world?
So I see a world where everything's automated. In an ecosystem. So where data and technologies come together. So I can see a world where data is automatically coming. We're already working on this, where data is coming into our system in an automated way via APIs. It's automatically mapped to the system. So very little handholding from a human perspective. Models are updated, and then the system will automatically optimize your marketing and spit out a plan. I mean, that's what we're doing right now, but it could feed directly into a DSP or a buying platform that then completes the circle, right? So very low human touch, where the system's automatically analyzing all the information, telling you exactly what you need to do, and then going out and doing it itself via, you know, the buying platforms.
And we'll be able to like garden and live in our eco paradise that we create.
You become algorithm trainers, right? So you're able to kind of see to make sure everything passes muster, and you're able to, you know, actually see the results coming out of the machine, make the positive impact that you're expecting.
I agree with that. I'm excited for AI to come. Like, I think AI is just going to want to help us. You know, it's going to, I think people are pessimistic. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole on AI, but my belief is that it's AI is going to want to help us be as good as we can be as humans. I think it's a really exciting opportunity overall.
Yeah. We kind of flip it here when we talk about AI. Of course, AI is central to what we're trying to do and create, a system that learns over time. But we think about it less as artificial intelligence and more of intelligent assistance, right? So yeah. Like, how do I bring intelligence to decisions that I'm making? I think we're a long way off from being able to say we're fully automated. So over time, how do we let the machines help us make better decisions and improve our own performance as humans, right? And as marketers. So that's really where we're headed over the short term.
At least every 3 weeks, I have to talk about my AI butler idea, which I think is the next $1 trillion idea, where you have the data that you're generating on the blockchain or whatever, and you're going to have this AI butler that knows you better than you, that you can input your goals into, that will become your emissary to interact with different systems, whether it's through the political system or through the tax system or whatever. You'll have AIs trained to, like, where you'll have inputs that you can manage, and then it will go out and do all these things, and we'll have our own AI butlers.
I love it. And then you can go garden, right? So
I don't even garden. I don't know why I'm bringing that up at all. I forget actually what we discussed on our pre-interview here, but, you know, we always ask brands about, like, it's funny, we ask media mix questions as part of this podcast. It's like, you know, we're going to give you $50K. How would you spend that, basically? So I know it's going to depend on a case-by-case basis, but given that those parameters, you've got a beauty brand, you've got $50K in 1 month, we say we want you to spend it. Where are you sort of like high level before you put it into the algorithm, thinking about how they should spend it?
Yeah, I know I gave you, it depends on the category and even it depends on the time of year, right? So I think if it's a high seasonal period, it's going to differ from when it's a low seasonal period. I think there's going to be a balance of that 50K. Well, I'll also say it depends on what financial objective you have, right? So if you give me 50K and say, I need to hit a really aggressive revenue number in the next couple months, I'm putting most of it in the bottom of the funnel, and that's probably what the system would recommend, right? So what are those bottom of the funnel activities that are going to drive transactions and drive revenue in the short term? If you're telling me, hey, we're going to invest this 50K and it's going to be, we want to build the brand with it, we want to be profitable, it's going to put a much higher balance of spend at top of the funnel, probably that 70-30 split that you would normally see if you're maximizing profitability. And it would be even more aggressive probably, during your seasonal periods. Right. So I think that's, I know it's a wishy-washy answer. We're probably looking at, hey, put this much in Meta, this much in TV, but I think it really depends. And I think it's more the parameters of what you're trying to do and what decisions you're trying to make and what the brand expectations are that determine where you put those dollars. And you want to make sure that you're spending the exact amount of dollars to be able to achieve that objective at any point in time.
And not reaching that point of diminishing returns, which I think is a big, exactly. Is what keeps a lot of the people in this audience up at night potentially, is just like, am I just, you know, spamming people and having negative, sometimes even negative brand effects, right? If you're being too aggressive on any one of these channels.
Exactly. I think managing the message and the right number of touch points and the right amount of frequency with a consumer. Also, if you're diversifying your tactics from an omni-channel perspective, you're also minimizing, a consumer seeing too much of you in any particular channel.
100%. Nice. Well, if you're listening to this and A, you want to talk media mix, you should look up Greg on LinkedIn, maybe. We'll include that link there. And otherwise go to keendS.com. What does the DS stand for? I should have checked.
decision systems. So Keen Decision Systems. So we're all about helping marketers make decisions. It's in our
very
name.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I imagine you're a pretty fun guy to talk to. So anyone wants to chat with you about Media Mix, just hit you up.
Would love to.
Awesome, Greg. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Would love to do it again.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.